So last week, we took a trip down memory lane with Billy Armstrong, head basketball coach at Bergen Catholic in New Jersey. Some fascinating stories, some of them funny, others incredibly vulnerable. Billy's a great storyteller, you know, fascinating speaker, yet one of the many things that I appreciate about him is not only how raw and vulnerable he is in those stories, but how he is really working hard as a leader to grow. It's not all talk for him. There's no way is this fake. He is as highly invested in his own growth as he is in the growth of his players. And yeah, they may have won many championships and were even at one point nationally ranked this year, but his priority isn't winning, it's growth and impact. He's more focused on the relationships and the culture than he is on the X's and O's. And that's what we're all about on the Coaching Culture Podcast. So welcome back. I'm JP Nurbin, the founder of TOC Culture Consulting. And I'm joined by my co-host, Nate Sanderson. Nate and I support coaches through our mentorship and coaching program. We work with coaches like Billy throughout the year in weekly one-on-one calls, providing a sounding board that people can reach out on, and resources for coaches that help them to make culture building simpler. We also get the importance of community, which is why we bring coaches together through our GroupMe, group chat, roundtables, cohorts, and retreats. To learn more all about this, head over to tocculture.com or just schedule a call using the link in the details of this episode. Now let's pick back up with the second part of our conversation with Billy, where we had just started to talk about his own coaching challenges.
I want to ask you this, because I think a lot of us as coaches, you know, struggle. And part of this, I suppose, is the fact that we identify ourselves as coach, right? And that becomes part of how we see ourselves. And then consequently, how our team plays, as you mentioned, becomes a reflection of how we see ourselves and how we believe others see us. But at the same time, when you do some of the inner work there, you know, and I've, some of the clients that I've worked with this past season would talk about the same thing. Like, how do I overcome as a coach the temptation to feel the way my team plays, or, you know, to have my emotional landscape determined by whether or not a 15-year-old can pass and catch a ball, or, you know, make a shot, or whatever it might be. How do you get past that? Or maybe another way of asking that is, if it isn't your team performance that gives you worth as a coach, you know, what does make you a good coach?
And I will honestly tell you that I've been coaching here for 14 years, 3 years as a JV coach. This is my 11th year. I've been coaching probably like 19 years or whatever. And I think this year was the first time, thanks to the lessons I learned from my team, this was the first time in my coaching career that I was able to not, judge myself. And, my self-worth was not identified with my team winning or losing. And I was able to get to that point for, there's two reasons why. One, I'm a father of three young kids, so six now, two and an 8-month-year-old. So I would go home after the games and I would be coloring unicorns and princesses in the coloring book after a tough loss. So my daughters would just, when I came home, win or lose. So like that really put things in perspective for me, like, what's this all about? You know, my daughters could care less. You know, and it's funny because when our season was over and we finally lost our last game in the Tournament of Champions semifinals, you know, everybody's upset. My wife's upset. We're upset. And I'm in the hallway at Rutgers and there's a news reporter guy getting ready to interview me. And there comes my wife and my daughter coming down the hallway and they stop and, you know, whatever. And my wife tells my daughter, April, daddy's team lost. And she says, good. So now he'll be home more now. So I'll get to see him more. And it was like, bam, like right in the face. It was like, so that really helped me just putting things like in perspective. The other thing is I really made a choice this year, Nate, because my team was struggling and it was just like, man, I'm failing these guys. Like, so in the process of figuring out how to help my team, I was actually able to help myself. And through the reading and different things, I made this decision that I love what I do and I'm going to attack each day with joy and enthusiasm. That sounds like really good, you know, and it's like, it sounds really good. And all of a sudden your team stinks that night and you're losing and stuff. I really stuck to it. And every day I got up, I wrote it on an index card. I carried it around with me. And that was just my thing. I love what I do. And I'm going to attack every day with joy and enthusiasm. Because at the end of the day, it's really, for me personally, being able to coach basketball and coach young kids and do these things on the worst day of coaching basketball is better than any day for me doing some other job. So I would just remind myself that, you know, and losing sucks. It's just, you just, it hurts you personally. It stinks and all those things. So, but I made that and put that intention out there and I stuck to it. And I would show up to practice the next day, and whether we win or lose, the kids felt the joy and enthusiasm, you know. And I started every practice the same way. Like once I got to that place in my life personally, and we'd start practice, and it's like, today's a perfect day to play some basketball, and we're going to attack each day. You're going to attack today with joy and enthusiasm. And I love you guys, and I love what I do. And it just so to answer your question, Nate, like I'm my kids, and then I made that decision that I love what I do. And I'm sticking to that.
No, and I can attest to that, you know, within our weekly calls, Billy, like, you know, there was definitely a shift around, you know, just after Christmas. And I think anytime that you hit adversity, there's always that shock, you know, and it comes back to the Mike Tyson quote, you know, we had this great plan for the culture this year. And then, you know, your team loses, you know, two of your top guys, arguably one of the best players in the country, you know, but you were able to readjust. I think what's kind of cool about your story is, you know, you talked about early on in your career, you got to know yourself, and there's only, it's not like done in one sitting, right? It's no. You're constantly finding out, learning about yourself, but you come up with those core values and they're very aspirational. And then once you know yourself, then you kind of start to work on yourself, and that's an endless process in itself too, you know?
Yeah.
I was kind of curious, you know, so much of your own personal journey this year, you actually were very vulnerable and you opened up and you shared with your team. And I think that's one of the powerful ways that you were able to kind of help some of those individuals grow. And I was wondering if you could kind of share that, because we're always about, you know, coaches trying to share some of like the tangible, practical things that they're doing to build their culture or grow as a leader. You've shared some awesome ones as a leader. So just curious from your perspective, you know, helping your team go through these storms this year. What were some things that you think were really valuable that you guys did?
I was going through this phase where we're not winning. And then it becomes that, you know, as coaches, we look at all of those things of how to fix it. And we always kind of look within, I feel like, that lens of the basketball stuff. Like we watch the film and it's the offense, it's the defense, it's our opponent, it's the scouting, there's all those kind of things. And you know, at one point I was just kind of rock bottom because we built a really good culture here. And we had one particular game this year where it was the exact opposite of our culture. I thought everything was just becoming undone. And I was like, man, like this is like everything I've worked for. It's going away in one game or whatever. So at that point it was like, man, I really got to go within myself and find out what I'm not doing here. And that's really where I did. So that's kind of where it started. And then it started one night at my house, honestly. And I took a book off my bookshelf that I hadn't read in a while. And I started reading it. And I was like, man, this is like my team here. And then I was like, my players need to hear this stuff. You know, so, as you know, JP, like the second part of our season, our practices were spent 1 hour of doing story time. And I really felt like I was a kindergarten teacher and the kids were sitting on the gym floor in a circle and I'm reading stories to them. And, you know, the stories that I read, they were fables and, you know, and just, you know, I'm not always into the fables, but it just worked for our team and stuff at the time. And, you know, I was thinking it in my head, it's like, man, we're getting ready for this game and I'm fighting myself. Cause it's like, I know the other coach is putting his 2 hours in on the court and the film and stuff. And I'm spending an hour with story time and then an hour with practice. That's all we would practice would be an hour, but I just couldn't believe the response in my players. Like all our players have a, you know, a notebook, a 3-ring binder, and they take notes. And I just couldn't believe the notes they were taking. They were sitting on the edges of the seats when I was reading these stories to them. So then, you know, that's the stuff that really started to like change things. And it's interesting because I always knew myself and I always tell everybody the greatest education you have is you have to read books and you have to travel. And that was my journey. Like when I was in Brussels, Belgium, I lived down the street from the English bookstore. There was no TV. I didn't understand. So I would go down there and I take these books that would help me become a better basketball player. So I've read so much and then I've had the opportunity to travel. And that's really like the all the education you need or whatever. So, but the reading of books that really kind of started to change things.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I remember years ago, maybe around 7 years ago now, that was a similar experience I had with one of my teams. Was just we'd sit down and we'd read. And at first, the player is a little bit resistant to it, but there's something impactful in those stories that help to, you know, create a shared stories and shared language that you guys can kind of connect on in moments of adversity, right?
Yeah, that's what it really was. We all of a sudden created this whole new language around Bergen Catholic basketball. And that was really the biggest thing, like just different like quotes and different things, concepts and ideas that showed up in the different books that we were reading. The one thing that jumped out to me was right away was that this line of how you can never outperform your self-image or self-worth. And that just hit me as a coach. And I was like, all right, wait, now I need to get to the bottom of, I have these kids on the surface that have scholarships, that are good players, have all these things, and they have all the swag on the outside. Man, they look cool. Like, I got players that look cool. I got players that, you know, they got highlights and mixtapes and Instagram and people following them around. But I'm like, man, I got really good. So then I started to have conversations in one-on-one meetings with my players, and I'm finding out the guys that I thought were the coolest and the most confident were the least confident. And, you know, peeling back that onion little by little with these, like, you know, one-on-one conversations, I was like, man, and there's no way we could be successful. Like, we're just, you know, going back to that concept of you can't outperform your self-worth and self-image. Two other ones that jumped out is I started saying it at the beginning of practice, at the end of practice, great things are coming our way. Like, great things are coming our way. And then and I just kept saying it, like, you know, during games, great things, halftime, great things are coming our way. And I knew I had the kids because they started making fun of me about it. And it's just like, yeah, we know, coach, great things are coming our way. And we're down 12 at the half here. And then all of a sudden we like found a way. And it's like, you know, and then the biggest one was every setback is a setup for something greater. And like, you know, that was big for us. And then JP, you know, because we had this conversation, but we had lost to our arch rival the second time at home. And I get a text that night from a freshman kid who was made our varsity team, was a great kid, Tyler. And he texts me that night, and I'm all upset and pissed and, you know, all the feelings that you have as a coach and all those things. And he texts me, he's like, don't worry, coach, every setback is a setup for something greater. And if he was in my living room, I think I would have wrung his neck and I would have been fired from coaching. I wanted to grab him by the collar. And I remember going into practice the next day, and I shared that story before we started practice. And I did a little acting because I went in and I kind of acted like I was pissed off. Like, Tyler sent me this quote last night, you know, every setback is a setup for something greater. And the nerve of Tyler. And he got all red in the face and stuff. And I just started burst out with laughter. And then our team started laughing. And then we had a great practice that day. But he was right. And what he was right was, he was just like, coach, I'm 15 years old. This is the message you're giving me. And this is the medicine you're trying to feed me every day. Well, take some of your own medicine, is basically what he told me. And it really was the medicine I needed at the time.
Yeah, no, it's a great story. One of the big things you knew you needed to get better at this year as a coach was the accountability thing. You know, it's just an area that, you know, we all struggle with coaches, is holding our players accountable in the right way. You know, empathy and care with accountability and doing those. And so what were, you know, some strides that you made and some things that worked for you when it came to holding your players accountable this season?
I guess the first thing was really learning from you, JP, to be honest with you. Because I was really poor at accountability, because I'm that person that was always like putting out fires just growing up as a kid. And I grew up where there was a lot of arguing going on around me, so I was always the one trying to make peace. And because there was a lot of arguing going on around me growing up as a young child, I really, really avoided confrontation. Because that was the worst. And I saw it every day, and it scared the lights out of me as like a 7-year-old, as a 9-year-old, you know? So I wanted to make every environment that I was in is just, it's okay. Everything's okay. And so I avoided confrontation because I was afraid of it. But then that hurt obviously with the accountability piece. And then I learned this year, I think was the biggest strides I took in accountability with our program. Because I learned from you, JP, that I always thought, like, to hold somebody accountable, you had to yell at them. You had to go off on them. You had to just blow up as a coach and basically throw everybody out of the gym and things and stuff. And then I learned this year from you that I didn't have to do that, you know. And we went through some stuff with some of our senior leaders, like going into the, you know, in our preseason, like with fall league games, where you know, they were not up to standards in our workouts, and you know, they behaved in a certain way towards the referees that, you know, was not allowed. So in just a conversational way, I said, hey, you know the standards, and I love you to death, but you're not playing in the next game because you're below the line with those standards and stuff. So just coming to terms with that you don't have to do it that way really helped me, and that you can still care for the kid and tell the kid you love him and all of those things really helped me. And then the other part was like, you know, you helped me with it. I just had to get better at it because I want to be an extraordinary coach, and I want to be as good as I can. And I just knew like I had to just take that leap of faith, because if I don't get better at confrontation and embracing confrontation, I don't get better with accountability, you know, I'm never going to be that as good as I want to be. And our program will never really get to the level I want it to get to. And so that helped us this year.
You know, you just shared something there, I think, which is huge. Well, two things, you know, the second being that it's really a skill, like you had to get better at it.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like a, oh, you've got it. Like you've got the play. Now you just run the play. Like it's an actual skill that you have to develop as a coach. But there's something like I actually just learned from you there, I think, or at least gain greater clarity on, which is for us as coaches, when it comes to accountability and doing it the right way, in a way that still respects the individual, that's empowering, you know, to do it the right way, we have to understand why it's hard for us. Cause like, I think your backstory, like how you grew up, like that, you know, impacts, you know, and makes it difficult for you because, you know, you're just constantly trying to be the people pleaser, you know, like, or make everybody happy. Yeah. Right. For me, I wasn't that guy. I was the guy starting every fight in our family and ruining Christmas dinner. Right. Yeah. So I was constantly, so my challenge with accountability is less about being permissive and more about just being the guy that comes in there and just sets everything ablaze, you know?
Yeah.
So, but like there's some of this inner work you have to do to be able to like make that leap to start to have these uncomfortable conversations. But the cool thing for you, I'd say there's two things that just amaze me about your story. And I just wish there was some way we could kind of explain this, but like you had so many hard moments where you had to hold your players to the standard and you were sitting guys out. And we're talking about talented dudes, guys that are going away to play on, you know, scholarships and just, you know, just very, you know, guys that have been in the program, but you stuck with it, but you continue to do it in the right way. And I don't know, just share a little bit about what those relationships were like at the end of the season. Like, you know, there's moments where you're doubting whether, man, is this kid going to make it? But like at the end of the day, like the relationship was still there, right?
Yeah, it was. And then I remember I had somebody tell me, administrator tell me one time, and this really helped me too, was that the spoiled child is the unloved child, you know, and that's something that kind of really resonated with me or whatever. So so I had to go, and not saying my players were spoiled, but maybe to a certain degree or whatever, but you know, I just felt I was failing them as their coach. I was failing them because I was letting them get away with things and letting things slide. Not because they were good players, maybe, but not because they were good players, because I just avoided the confrontation and the accountability because I just didn't like it myself. But what I found was, is that it was our relationships with two players in particular grew immensely because I held them accountable, and the conversations that we had, you know, really, really grew. And I think two things happened is one is that our relationships are just stronger than ever. And they also understand like why I did what I had to do, you know, in our communication. And now, you know, I really feel like I've kind of set them on their path. Like I've done my job, like they're prepared. They're still going to run into some trouble and adversity. Like that's just that's how it is. But I really feel like I've prepared them. So, but yeah, holding them accountable, I was all wrong. It's like, it's not like they don't like you or they, you know, they're just, or they're going to transfer. That's the big fear, I think, in high school. And if you hold the kids accountable, they're going to transfer, you know? And it was like, at the end of the day, it's just like, I can't put my head to the pillow at night knowing that I'm letting this kid slide because I'm failing him. So, but the relationships grew and these kids grew and, but I was able to do it in a way that didn't blame them or shame them or embarrass them. And doing the one-on-ones, it's just way better when a lot of times with the accountability, and you just have to figure out a way to make sure your team knows that there's accountability. You just, because you don't want the other players thinking like you let Johnny slide because he was the starter.
Yeah, it ended up being like a, you know, an amazing finish, you know, to the season, you know. But I think there's one other thing about that accountability, you know, that's worth you telling the story about, which is, you know, I always talk about there's, you know, support with accountability, there's advocacy with accountability. You build the relationship, but also you try to work with your players to equip them with some tools to maybe work through some of those situations. And, you know, it was quite the cool story there is, you know, there are some guys that, you know, like all our players, everyone has their struggles, their challenges, but you had some pretty cool kind of like a, what I would call agreed upon interventions where you were able to support them, you know, to get back above the line so that you maybe didn't have to hold them accountable, like in a really serious or heavy way. Right.
Right. Yeah. We, as I kind of started to peel back the layers to the onion and stuff, like we had one player who was just a really star player for us. He, you know, he's this all-time leading scorer in school history. And he was going through things that we saw, you know, as a senior, where he was always a kid that played with a smile on his face, and he was playing very, very angry. And that anger was really being taken out on the referees. And so for the first part of the season, it's just like your normal conversations. You can't do that. What's going on with the refs? I take you out of the game. All right, you're out of the game now. I will put you back. Like all of those kind of like normal things. So the first thing I had to do was find out like what's really going on with the kid. You know, and it's kind of like, I don't know, like the man in the arena, Tom Brady. It's like everybody outside is like, what's wrong with this kid? Well, this kid's got some stuff going on. He's got some family stuff. He's got a grandparent that passed away. He's got a mom that's in the hospital. He has a dad that's really hard on him. You know, his brothers and sisters are older. They've moved out of the house. He's by himself now. So it's our job as coaches is to get to know these so they we know why they're reacting or acting in a certain way. So I peeled back those layers and we got to that and had a lot of one-on-ones. You know, and then as we kind of like moved along, you know, these things just kind of like surfaced, I guess. So we talked in a one-on-one meeting about flipping the script with this one player. Like he's got to flip the script. And the reason why this kid actually, with all his issues, he really does care about his team and he wants to be a great leader for his team. You know, so we got to talking and everything. When the meeting ended, I said, listen, instead of me taking you out when you're going after the refs and so on and so forth, because, you know, your leadership and your play and stuff helps our team, I'm just going to yell out, you know, flip the script, you know, just flip the script. And he said, okay. And there was like this relief, I guess, that kind of came over the kid. So of course you're going to be put to the test. And the next game, there he goes again. After we had this hour and 30 long conversation, there he goes again with like, he's at getting after the refs. And to the kid's credit, I just yelled out, like, flip the script. And he looked at me and he's like, I got you, coach. I got you, coach. And he did. And it was, I couldn't believe it, you know. And I, you know, and then there was other times in the games, but we just, that became like his personal word. And nobody on the team knew what it was. It was just between him and I. And, you know, it worked. And we had two other players where, you know, we had similar things that we had one player where he would always zoom in every game and go in. So then I talked to him in meetings and stuff, and we talked about zooming out. So I'd yell out, zoom out. And he'd be, you know, I got you, coach. Again, he would zoom out. And then we have one other kid who, you know, just quickly is going to be an incredible player, is an incredible player. You'll be watching him on TV. And he's a big kid. So, you know, nobody passes the ball to big kids. He gets down on himself a lot the time. And he has people in his corner that always tell him he doesn't get the ball enough. He needs the ball and so on and so forth. So, you know, with him, it was really getting him to have a strong posture because his posture would always be down. And then I had an alumni send me this article, you know, about Coach K and how LeBron James was upset during, you know, one of the Olympic games at Kobe Bryant. And, you know, the article was about LeBron James telling Coach K, you better fix that guy. You know, so I read the article and then I said, man, I could use this with Terry. And basically, it was pretty simple. Kobe was being selfish during one of the games. LeBron James got taken out of the game by Coach K. Coach LeBron walked past Coach K and said, Coach K, you better fix that guy. And he used some MF words involved with that as well. And Coach K in the article said he was very nervous the next day. Like, he was right. I had to go fix Kobe Bryant. I got to tell one of the greatest players in the history of the game, you're shooting too much, you're being selfish. And so Coach K, it's interesting as coaches, like he was nervous. Like here's this Hall of Fame coach that never gets nervous. He's nervous about this conversation. It's like perception of what we think. You know, so now that with my player, I talked to him about it. And I said, anytime you think you're not getting the ball, just yell out, fix it. You know, and leave out the MF part of it, but just yell out, fix it. and I'll run a play for you. I'll run a set play for you. And, you know, this kid finished the game. You know, we had about 13 games left of the season. He never yelled out, fix it, ever. But he had this strong posture, and he was unbelievable during our season. And, you know, this is a kid that doesn't know who his dad is. And I think some of the male figures, he hasn't had many. And maybe to a certain degree, he felt like, man, like coach has my back here. You know, and anytime I want, I could say fix it. He's going to run a play for me and I'm going to get the ball. And he never actually asked for it. So, but these were kind of these one little words that were between us that, but I would never have gotten there if it wasn't for the relationship that I built with the kids and also getting the backstory of why they were acting the way they were acting.
And I think the cool thing is that with some of those phrases, like it wasn't like you just popped, you know, you pulled it out of a hat, you know, it wasn't,
right,
you know, like you just made it up. Like there's a bit of a story there, right? They can connect the story. I think the really cool part about the last story, the fix it story, is that it's kind of the opposite in some ways of the other ones. It's like, it's a word that they say to you that
right.
helps to empower them when they're going through some frustrations.
Right.
And I think, you know, obviously postmen, big guys, they have some legitimate frustrations when they don't touch the ball. Oh, yeah. And they're expected to play defense and run the ball, you know, run the floor four times. I remember like years ago, I had a player that was frustrated like that. He was a big man. And I used the story of who was the coach of Dwight Howard back at the Orlando Magic. I think it was like Stan Van Gundy,
Stan
right?
Van Gundy, maybe, yeah.
And, Dwight Howard was, you know, pissed off. He wasn't getting the ball enough. So he brings Dwight Howard. He says, you want the ball? You know, points to the rim. He's like, then you just go get it. You essentially go get more rebounds, you know? That wasn't nearly as effective as you actually, you know, connecting with this player and showing him, hey, I got your back. I got you, you know, empowering and to kind of do it in a respectful way too, you know? And I think that's one of the cool things about your journey is that your journey as a coach is not separate from your player's journey. It's almost like the shared journey of like growth and that's, I think, one of the reasons your players love you too, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think it's that that phrase that the All Blacks use that is really, you know, better people become better players. And that's something that's in our program that I stole from them, but I use it with myself all the time. And it's really, really true. Like we spend all of this time, you know, on different things and it's just, but until you become better as a person and who you are as a person, it doesn't mean you're a bad person. It's, we all have these flaws and different things, like, you know, whether it be showing up on time or being organized, taking notes correctly, like until you become better as a person, like you're never going to get better at whatever your craft is. So like, why are we not spending more time becoming better people and spending so much? And that's really the journey of our team this year. You know, we got to the point where it was like, we had no choice. Like we had to all become better people. And it started with me as the head coach, where it was just like my effort, my attitude was not where it needed to be.
Yeah. I want to get you out of here on this, man. It's, you know, you've talked about that and you've been really vulnerable. So I'm going to go ahead and just ask you this question, which is just as you kind of look towards next season and just moving forward in your coaching career here, where are you trying to grow and what are you going to try to, you know, what are you going to do to grow in those areas?
One is just, as JP knows, and he'll probably chuckle. I'll definitely chuckle. It's just becoming like more organized and just more efficient with my time. And that's one area that I'm just really, really not good at. And it's something I've worked at and I've gotten better. But it's something that I really just really need to put at like the top of the list. Just getting it more organized. And then the other part really is just continuing to do what I do with, you know, with yourself and stuff. And I'm just kind of not going to turn back. The stuff that I learned this year about like positive self-talk, a positive attitude. You know, I got to see one of my former teammates speak at the Final Four and we talked afterwards because it worked with his team. And we had this conversation because he mentioned in his talk that, you know, he's doing, I think he called it positive psychology, you know, Landry Kosmowski at Swarthmore. And, you know, so we positive self-talk and stuff. And it's like people shy away from it because everybody thinks it's like rainbows and unicorns. You know, so I went up and spoke to him afterwards and I told him, like, I believe in rainbows and unicorns because I don't know if it's brainwashing or whatever you want to call it. Like, our kids really started to buy into, like, yeah, great things are coming our way. you know, like the different like phrases that we use that all seems like it's just like pie in the sky. It didn't mean that we didn't prepare. And I think as coaches, sometimes and as people, it's like, you know, we don't believe enough of what's possible because the fact that it's like, we don't believe in the psychology part of it, that, you know, it's really the mindset and in how you talk to yourself and all of those things. So I'm going to continue to get better at that. You know, our positive self-talk and helping our kids around that, the positive psychology, I'm going to do better at bringing better attitude every day. And I'm going to continue to get better at bringing joy and enthusiasm every day. Because it, you know, it's just made the whole thing for us this year. And I'm by nature a pessimistic coach, and we're not going to score a basket tonight. Like, that's how I was, like, oh my God, we might not score one basket tonight. We have no chance of winning. So I'm changing that. So really it's going to be the organization and becoming a full-blown, full-bled optimist.
Well, I love it. And I appreciate you sharing that, because I think that's great advice for coaches, you know, your own example, you know, to follow, whether it is, I mean, it doesn't have to be organization or positive self-talk. It could be something else, but those are areas I think so often we talk about growth mindset with players, but we don't necessarily have that with ourselves, you know, and it's like, right. Well, I'm just not an organized person, or I'm a little bit of a pessimist. And you've shown that, you know, through daily action, consistently over time, staying in this journey, the growth can happen. So appreciate you coming on the podcast and share a little about your journey and your experiences, man.
Oh, thank you so much, JP. It's an absolute honor. And I really, really appreciate you having me on.
All right. That's it for our discussion with Billy. We definitely appreciate his vulnerability and the practical applications that he shared with us. Thanks again for listening into the Coaching Culture Podcast. Please be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to the podcast so you don't miss any future episodes.